All right, y'all, welcome to the Scott Horton Show. I am the director of the Libertarian Institute, editorial director of antiwar.com, author of the book Fool's Errand, Time to End the War in Afghanistan, and I've recorded more than 5,000 interviews going back to 2003, all of which are available at scotthorton.org. You can also sign up for the podcast feed. The full archive is also available at youtube.com/ScottHortonShow. All right, you guys on the line. I've got Gareth the Great. Gareth Porter, of course, investigative historian and journalist, author of The Perils of Dominance About Vietnam, Manufactured Crisis, which is the authoritative source on Iran's nuclear program. And then his latest book with John Kiriakou, of course, is The CIA Insider's Guide to the Iran Crisis, From CIA Coup to the Brink of War. And he writes regularly for us at antiwar.com and at Truth This and Truth That. And here he is at consortiumnews.com, the New York Times insidious, ongoing disinformation campaign on Russia and the elections. Welcome back to the show, Gareth. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. I hope you're doing well, too, Scott.
I'm hanging in there, bud. Appreciate that. Listen up. So here's the point. Ongoing. I saw people on Twitter the other day. I quit Twitter, but okay, I admit sometimes I troll Aaron Maté and Glenn Greenwald's feeds because I love those guys. And I saw where someone was attacking Greenwald and saying, I can't believe this guy's still talking about Russia. Like the debunkers were the ones who, you know, dragged this thing on for 3 years, this horrible hoax. And now the real point, 4 years, they're not done yet. They're still blaming Russia for intervening in America's democracy. They're trying to disrupt our society, Gareth. I read it in an article by, David Sanger in the New York Times. Well, that must not be right then.
That's a pretty good generalization, I would say, yes.
Yeah, for people who don't know, David Sanger, he's just one click less bad than Michael Gordon, but he is the third worst reporter, with Walter Duran, probably the fourth worst reporter in the history of the New York Times, which is really, really saying something. And he's made a career out of lying about Iran and their nuclear program. Gareth made a career out of debunking David Sanger's lies about Iran and their nuclear program. And now here he is again on the Russia beat and again claiming that the Russians are trying to fix the election for Donald Trump. Gareth, huh?
Yeah, he's on the warpath on the Russiagate, Russia elections issue, just as he was on Iran, and equally bad and untruthful in both cases.
Mm-hmm. All right. So yeah. Gareth, there were two big stories that came out in February. The first one was saying they're trying to rig the election for Trump. Then the second one was saying, well, they're trying to rig the Democratic election for Sanders as a way to help rig the election for Trump. What was the source for that? What was the story there?
Well, I mean, that one was started with the administration's intelligence briefing for the House Intelligence Committee in February. I think it was February 10th, but I'm not sure about that. And in that briefing, the woman who's in charge of election security, Shelby Pearson, apparently said something to lead a number of members of the committee to believe that that basically the Russians were already favoring Trump in order to get him elected. And that was obviously a very sensational story, which leaked out and created a firestorm politically, of course, because the Republican members pushed back. And then it turned out that there was some indication that Pearson had gone too far. She'd overstated the degree to which there was a conclusion that the Russians were actually trying to get Trump elected.
Shocking.
That they clearly did not have any evidence to suggest that and didn't even really try to suggest it. that was merely an inference, and who knows exactly how she put it, but it was clearly off the beaten path of truth, and of anything that would pass the test of being accepted by people in the committee. So basically, the Times completely fell for the initial story. That was, of course, red meat for them. They loved it and played it up, and then they had to back off. So that was a second story was the result of their backing off of that. And then they tried to portray it as merely a dueling narratives, as Sanger put it, within the intelligence community, which of course is a very different story from what the original was. Mm-hmm. But Sanger was definitely trying to continue to stick with the basic narrative that the Russians are interfering in the election. He's less concerned about precisely how to formulate it.
Right. Now, I'm sorry, because I think I screwed you up there. The Sanders story was in the Post by somebody else.
Well, the Sanders story was in the Post, but then Trump, Sanger basically latched onto that and used that as part of a second a follow-up, which was actually not in the New York Times itself, but was on the Times Daily podcast. Mm-hmm. And in that podcast called The Daily, Sanger actually suggested that now the Russians are supporting both Trump and Sanders, and either one would be okay. And the reason is that they're both reluctant to intervene in foreign in foreign conflicts. Mm-hmm. And so that is the official word now from Sanger about how the Russians are navigating the current political scene.
Yeah. Now, I mean, to me, I'm just going, by my impression here, I can't say I know exactly for sure, but it seems pretty obvious that this is just a dirty trick by the American intelligence agencies, that this doesn't have anything to do with Russia at all. They're just trying to get Biden elected.
I don't know that the intelligence community is trying to get Biden elected specifically, but I do think that their natural bent is to believe that the Russians are interfering, because that serves all kinds of interests that are of concern to the intelligence community and the Pentagon and everybody else who's in the national security state. I think that's the fundamental reality that we're looking at here.
Yeah.
But beyond that, they would like to make sure that nobody gets elected who is going to be soft on Russia, right? I mean, that's the logical corollary.
Yep.
of that interest. So naturally, they're going to play up anything that would suggest that the Russians favor Trump. And if they can do the same thing for Sanders, of course, they're going to do that as well. So basically, it amounts to pretty much the same thing.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, they would prefer Biden. They would do anything necessary to put down challengers who are, anti-interventionist, therefore not interested in having a new Cold War with Russia, and therefore de facto they favor Biden. You're right.
Yeah. Well, and that's, clearly what they absolutely, other than her endorsing Sanders over Hillary last time around, this is clearly what they hate about Tulsi Gabbard more than any other thing, is her opposition to the Russiagate narrative and the whole Cold War narrative with Russia, and warning about the threat of a nuclear war, an absolutely unnecessary nuclear war provoked by the USA. And so...
Absolutely. But of course, I mean, the key players in sort of tagging Tulsi Gabbard with being a Russian agent are, the corporate wing of the Democratic Party, which is the Democratic Party's leadership, obviously.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that plays a far greater role than the intelligence community in that saga of...
I guess I just don't see where the line is between the Democrats and the CIA. I guess there must be one somewhere.
There is a line, of course, but they are in bed together, no doubt about it.
Well, and especially on this entire Russia narrative, it serves both of their interests so well to try to push this thing. And one of the things that was funny about it, especially watching the TV news talk about it, was, well, obviously Vladimir Putin knows exactly what we know, which is that Biden is by far the stronger candidate against Trump in the fall. And that's why they're supporting Sanders, because nobody likes Bernie Sanders and there's no chance that he could possibly beat Trump. So that must be why they're supporting him. And that must also be Putin's reasoning, of course, to do this. And they just they can extrapolate all dang day about it after that, you know?
Yeah, but even the Times, even David Sanger, realized that that line is extremely weak. And he actually acknowledged that, and this he actually acknowledged, as I recall, in the Times itself, that it's so early in the process that the Russians would not have, you know, would not be in a position to see, to talk about who they wanted to support. And that was an admission that all the stuff that the Times was publishing about Russian interference in the election, that would have talked about favoring one candidate or another has to be bullshit.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit inconsistent that Putin is this mad genius who rules the whole world. And also, he's as dumb as a damned Democrat. And he thinks that based on the success of Al Gore and John Kerry and Hillary Clinton, that he really ought to support the centrist, you know?
Well, yeah, that argument would be perhaps the most difficult one of all.
I guess I finished that wrong. Not that he ought to support the centrist, that he would conclude that the centrist is the strongest candidate. And so therefore, that's why to support Bernie Sanders, the weaker one, when the only reason Obama won was because he was seen as an outsider. He was posing as a Kucinich outsider type, and that was plausible enough because he looked like an outsider. That much is for sure. But the middle-of-the-road guys have lost every time in the last generation.
Right. The whole series of Times stories about the alleged Russian interference in U.S. elections are based on one implausible argument after another. I think that's the fundamental theme here in my piece. It's the implausibility and of course, the lack of any factual basis for the series of pieces that they've run over the last 3 years that continue to sort of warn the American public that the Russians are coming.
Well, you know, I think though that you're skipping the most important part here, which is about how America has always been a completely racially harmonious place until the Russians came and invented American racism and strife here.
Right. Anyway, this is the latest installment of the New York Times saga of how the Russians are trying to tear us apart in order to get control over U.S. Society and politics. This is, of course, a familiar theme in New York Times coverage, which is that they are exploiting racial division in order to sharpen it and to, if possible, create racial violence. That would be just perfect for them. And of course, the latest one, the latest installment that they published on March 10th was called Russia Trying to what's the rest of it? Something about racial disharmony, and this is, I guess, to my mind, perhaps the most hilarious of all of the pieces that they've done, because they tried to suggest that that RT, so-called Russia Today in the past, RT was stoking racial disharmony, racial division, by publishing a story about that video that went viral after the cops were shown by somebody who had the video on their iPhone accosting a young black who clearly had done nothing and was trying to ask, what have I done? And all these cops descend on the kid and were beating him up, essentially, or at least hurting him, and for no apparent reason. And this video went viral, and all the RT did was to report that fact. And you know, I've read the piece. It wasn't trying to stoke violence or anything of the sort, but merely doing the same thing the New York Times did in their own piece that same day. In fact, the Times piece went into greater detail about the theme of racial injustice with regard to the police in New York, much more than RT did. So clearly, the Times was stretching to try to find something that they could use to suggest that Russia today, as a state media of some sort, was stoking racial violence potentially. It was an absurd story from the beginning.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It just seems crazy that. It's not really supposed to make sense. It's just supposed to sound impressive for a moment. That, well, if RT covers something that happens in America, well, you see, they're trying to make you upset when it's just news. Yeah. And it's upsetting news. So
now I admit that the headline was more about the supposed Russian support for white supremacists in the United States. That was really the thing that they spent most of their ink on, so to speak.
Was on whose support? Was on whose support?
This was supporting an American now living in Russia, married to a Russian woman, who has this organization called The Base, and who the Times is suggesting, according to its sources, they believe that the Russians are supporting this guy, but they have. It turns out, if you read carefully, they have absolutely no evidence of that. The only thing that is even related to it is that now the FBI is carrying out, or is it DHS? I think it's DHS, is carrying out some sort of investigation to see if the Russians are providing support to this organization or to the individual. But so far, they have no evidence whatsoever.
Yeah, what a news story. Oh, the FBI is investigating to find out if something's true. Put that on the front page.
Right, exactly. And this is the modus operandi of the Times over and over again. In one story after another that I cover in my piece, the headline announces that the Russians are doing something, and then you read the story and you find out, well, they're suspected of wanting to do something, or they have the capability, or they think they have the capability, or they're investigating to see if they've done something.
Hey, man, you guys are going to love No Dev, No Ops, No IT by Hussein Badakhshani. It's a fun and interesting read all about how to run your high-tech company like a good libertarian should. Forget all the junk. Read No Dev, No Ops, No IT by Hussein Badakhshani. Find it in the margin at scotthorton.org. Hey, y'all, here's the thing. Donate $100 to the Scott Horton Show, and you can get a QR code commodity disc as my gift to you. It's a 1 ounce silver disc with a QR code on the back. You take a picture of it with your phone, and it gives you the instant spot price and lets you know what that ounce of silver is worth on the market in Federal Reserve notes in real time. It's the future of currency in the past, too. CommodityDiscs.com or just go to scotthorton.org/donate. Hey, guys, Scott Horton here for ExpandDesigns.com. Harley Abbott and his crew do an outstanding job designing, building, and maintaining my sites, and they'll do great work for you. You need a new website? Go to ExpandDesigns.com/Scott and save $500. And now, so listen, I started with the most current events here and skipped the beginning of your article where you kind of refresh our memory about all the major lies that David Sanger has told as one of the major leaders of the Russiagate hoax in this country since at least 2017, maybe 16.
Yes. Yes. Well, and of course, it's not just Sanger, but he's a key figure in it. I mean,
it's just that I hate him the most, so I like saying his name a lot. But go ahead.
Well, me too. But I just want your listeners to know that the entire Times political staff, that is the Washington-based political writers,
yep,
are involved in writing about this.
Such as and Scott so, Shane and Mark Mazzetti.
Right, right. Uh-huh.
And more.
I think there are three others as well who are part of this Times endeavor. So it is not just Sanger, although he, I think, is the leader of the pack.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting because this is probably not relevant at all, but I remember back in the times when it was really all the lies about Iran's nuclear program, whenever it was Broad in Sanger, it would be horrible. But whenever it was Mazzetti in Sanger, there would always be one paragraph that says, by the way, this whole article is bullshit. Forget it.
Yeah, but then Mazzetti has become a full partner in this Russiagate tale. I mean, he's really deeply implicated in it, obviously.
Yeah.
One of the key stories, of course, was a Shane and Mazzetti story, which I'm sure you want to get into.
I do. Let's hear it. Remind us.
Well, we'll do that. But first, I want to go back to that February 2017 story.
Yeah.
Which was the introduction, basically, to the whole Russiagate tale. I mean, it was on that date when the New York Times and CNN both published stories that told about how the Russians, how the Trump campaign aides were in cahoots with the Russians, because we knew this because there were a number of cases of these campaign aides having meetings with Russians, including Russian intelligence. And of course, now we know that the only instances of somebody associated with the Russian campaign having meetings with Russian intelligence was Carter Page, and that didn't happen in 2017 or 2016. It happened years earlier when he was back in the United States, and he was dealing with Russian intelligence at the same time that he was reporting to the CIA, something that only came out when the IG report, the IG report finally made it clear that the FBI or Department of Justice people knew this, but did not tell the FISA court what they knew, so that they could justify the campaign to basically plant people to interview Carter Page and to, of course, listen in on all of his phone conversations and intercept his emails.
Yeah, so, absolutely. So, just to reiterate that point for people who missed it, this whole investigation, and there were a couple of fake excuses for starting it, but the main one that got them the FISA warrant on Page, and then therefore one hop, two hops, and who knows who all they were spying on based on that FISA warrant against Page. I don't know if the IG ever exactly addressed that part of it or not, but that, as you said, his supposed contacts, they weren't going off the Steele report claiming that he had made a deal to lift American sanctions in exchange for 20% ownership stake of Russia's biggest state-owned oil company. Completely most ridiculous lie that anybody ever made up in the world, probably. They weren't going on that. They were going on, this guy may have talked to someone who had been in Russian intelligence years ago. Oh, and by the way, he went straight to who? His CIA handlers, who he worked for. He was an agent, not an officer, but an agent of the CIA. And he went straight to them and said, I think some Russian intelligence people tried to talk to me. Here's everything you need to know about it. And the CIA told the FBI, this guy's a patriot. He works for us. And the FBI said, exactly. Well, we're going to pretend not to know that. And we're going to launch an investigation of the president for high treason based on this outright lie that we know is an outright lie. And we're going to drag it on for 3 years after that.
Right. And here's the thing that, as I point out in the story, is the real clincher about the dishonesty of the Times. I mean, they, of course, read the IG report. They knew what was in the IG report. But when they covered that, they did not admit, they did not acknowledge that it included the information that you just talked about Carter Page and CIA and his intelligence, Russian intelligence contacts, which was which would, of course, unmask the fact that they had gotten the story all wrong.
Yep. All right, we're almost out of time here, unfortunately. So real quick here, tell us about, very briefly, we got 4 minutes. So the case, the smear, the ridiculous narrative about the Internet Research Agency and right. the latest developments there, because that is huge, I think.
Yes. Well, okay, just to briefly go over the story by Shane and Mazzetti that I wrote about soon after it came out.
Which is linked in this piece, too.
Yes, right. But that story basically had perhaps the most sensational revelation that the Times has ever come out with. I'm joking, of course. That the Internet Research Agency had succeeded in reaching 127 million Americans, almost as many as they, I think they point out in the piece, as who voted in the 2016 election. Now, who could possibly doubt that that means that the Russians had succeeded in essentially rolling over, you know, the American electorate and fooling them and getting them to vote for Trump? But in fact, that was a meaningless statistic, first of all, because that simply means that that many people were estimated by, you know, making certain assumptions about retweeting and so forth, may have gotten one or more stories that came from the Internet Research Agencies in their news feed in Twitter, Facebook. So that was much less impressive if you view it from that point of view. But the real point is that compared with the number of news feeds that went into the number of stories that went into news feeds of people who had Facebook at that point, it was like a thimble in an ocean. It was 413 million times less than the number that went into the Facebook feeds during the 2015 to 2017 period, which is the period that they're talking about.
Mm-hmm. So, in other words, huge lie by omission, by refusing to compare it to the overall number of posts people are seeing on Facebook and Twitter.
Absolutely. And that figure was obviously available, and the Times knew it because they had cited it in another story that they published.
Right. Okay, so now what happened this week?
Right. What happened was that the Justice Department dropped their case against the Internet Research Agency. Obviously, what was going on was that they had been surprised by the fact that the IRA, the Internet Research Agency, had decided to essentially contest the Justice Department case against the IRA, the indictment of the IRA, and were.
So, in other words, this was supposed to be a really easy trial in absentia, and they had the nerve to show up to defend themselves, and that was a big problem.
Right. And of course, that meant that their claims were going to be contested, the claims about the Russian intelligence people doing all this stuff, and the Justice Department was not willing to submit to a process that would involve discovery,
or cross-examination,
right. Yep. Right.
And by the way, I saw people on Twitter on Greenwald's feed saying, well, but that's just William Barr doing it and he's a compromised toady. And Greenwald responded, that's not true. It's Mueller's staff that signed on to this.
Of course. Yes, absolutely.
Very important point wanted to try to hide behind that excuse.
Yeah. I mean, you know, who knows what would have come out. And, you know, they would argue, obviously, that this would compromise, you know, their secret access to the highly classified information and how they got it and so forth, sources and methods. But in fact, you know, equally likely or more likely, it involved the potential for exposure to the fact that they didn't really have the information they were claiming. They didn't really have any reliable information that would allow them to make those sorts of claims. And you know, we now have reason to believe that the inside source that they were relying on was really not knowledgeable enough to be able to make those sorts of claims. And that's supported by the fact that he's now living in, where is it, McLean or somewhere in Northern Virginia under his own name. So he can't be that sensitive.
Yep. All right. Well, listen, I'm so sorry that we're out of time, Garrett, but thank you so much for your time. And I beg you people to go and read Garrett the Great over here at consortiumnews.com, the New York Times insidious ongoing disinformation campaign on Russia and the elections. And let me ask you one more thing real quick. You have a brand new one here at Gray Zone. I just found Eric sent it right to me. Pompeo and Netanyahu paved a path to war with Iran, and they're pushing Trump again. We're actually running a story on antiwar.com today where they were trying to get him to strike Iran this last week over what was going on in Iraq, and Trump refused because he thought it would make him look terrible in the middle of an epidemic, and especially Iran is one of the hardest hit people, hardest hit countries from the coronavirus, and he told them no. Thank God for that. The cool, patient wisdom of Donald Trump has prevailed for peace, again, for now. But my question for you is, can we reprint this at antiwar.com, please, sir?
Oh, of course. Always.
Great. Okay, you're the best. Oh. Thank you so much, Gareth.
Thank you, Scott, as always.
The Scott Horton Show, Antiwar Radio, can be heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in L.A., APSradio.com, antiwar.com, scotthorton.org, and libertarianinstitute.org.